Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast. This is Fivefold.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 30. My name is Chris Bemuter.
I'm Shane Presley.
Remember, follow us on Twitter, subscribe on iTunes, all that good social media stuff. It is the 30th episode we've done, Shane.
Woohoo!
This is amazing. So as long as we don't lose this episode, it's pretty awesome. We are joined by the guys of Fivefold. If you guys would like to introduce yourself and what you guys do in the band.
Yeah. I'm Derek. I play drums.
Hello, my name's Matt. I play guitar for Fivefold.
My name's Ryan, and I do vocals.
My name's Coco. I play the bass guitar.
Sorry, that was a little weird.
They're also Muppets, which we didn't really point out. So
I was normal though. So.
Yeah, yeah.
I control all.
You control. Yeah, his hand is.
Wait, where's his hand? Where's his hand?
It's a good thing it's a podcast and not like a video, because otherwise it would be really awkward.
Yep.
But I mean, your lips don't move when you talk.
Nope. So not at all.
Lips don't lie.
I mean, something, right? Yeah, so thanks for coming on, guys. We were trying to record a song, but our microphone was giving us technical issues. So, but appreciate you guys jamming. It sounded good, and you can sing really high.
Sounded awful.
It sounded awful because of my microphone and my computer. Not because of talent. But I appreciate you playing like four times.
And dude, hey man, that's what I was born to do, man. Just play for you.
Only you.
This is the moment you've been building up for.
Well, what's crazy is I had a dream last night that I'd see someone like you. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? And then I see you, and I'm like, oh, dude, it makes so much sense.
Is it right like now? One of those dreams where you wake up and you're disappointed? Like, oh, it's just a dream.
Man. Yeah, I was, but then I got so happy. Why are you drinking my beer?
First of all, I paid for that.
That was a terrible.
Second of all, I just wanted to know what that tasted like.
It's amazing. But, no, I'm just so glad you're here.
I appreciate that. And it's, you know, I can tell there's a connection right now.
Dude, I'm looking in your eyes.
It's the glasses.
It's the Chris and
Ryan show. The podcast ended because they were just talking to each other the whole time.
Let me bring something to light here. No. This is the first time there's more glasses in the room than non-glasses.
What about beards?
Two beards.
I mean, too bad.
Yeah.
On the scale of this beard, that's a no beard.
The scale of that beard, I'm just an untamed.
Yeah. It's looking, I mean, I can't grow a beard very well. I wish I could.
Like Matt, so far, we're a terrible interview.
No, it's good.
Pretty good. I think we got it.
It's doing well. It's conversational. That's what it's supposed to be.
Absolutely.
It's fun. Yeah. So let's talk about the band. How'd the band form? You guys have been together since like 2007, right? Is it?
Yeah,
boy, it's been a long time.
You guys are looking old. I don't want to brag.
Well, Derek's 50.
Is he
50
these days?
How'd we form?
Me and Jesse, our late guitarist, we started kind of just playing together in a room in my house in Crestwood. We're just jamming. He's like, "Hey, I know this dude from school. He's a really good guitar player. We should get together." And I was like, "I'm down, like totally." And that was Matt. So me, Jesse, and Matt get together, and we start jamming in my basement. I think it was the first place.
Over
in Arnold, and we just kind of play, and it's like, oh man, this is so much fun. This is so sweet. Like, dude, we were like on cloud nine. We're like, dude, we need a bassist and a singer, and let's try and do something. So at that point, it's just fun. And then Matt hit Jesse up at school. I remember Jesse coming to me and being like, "Hey, dude, Matt told me at school today. Like, do you guys want to start a band? Like, do you want to do something?" I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome, dude. Like, playing a band, like, sweet. So Matt's guitar teacher actually played bass, and his name was Alan, and we started there. And then I was playing at a church camp, and I saw this curly-headed dude across the field playing to a bunch of girls. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to go check out this dude playing acoustic guitar to all these girls and see how terrible he sounds. Much to my surprise, I get over there and he actually sounded good.
Pretty disappointed. You're like, God dang it.
Disappointed. Like, hey, good. I thought you were going to suck. What is this, man?
I was like, man, tell me what you're doing your band now.
So, yeah, I was like, hey, man, like, we're starting this band. Like, I think you're pretty sweet. Like, where do you live? And he lived like 20 minutes from us. I was like, oh, dude, that's crazy. So I went back, told Jesse and Matt and Alan, and we brought him in for an a tryout, I guess, and we wrote a song or two, like, in the tryout. Yeah. It was, the first song was called Your Fault.
Wrote it in Jesse's driveway.
And we were, dude, we were so stoked, man. We were like,
oh, I remember, man, we're in a band. I was on the phone with my girlfriend at the time, and I was like, I was saying how stoked, and I was like, hey, am I in the band? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm in the band. That's literally like how it happened. Yeah.
That'd be funny if you're like, yes, I'm in this band. Like, hey, you're not in the band, dude.
If it was the reverse, it would have been totally awkward.
That's what they told me, but I just stuck around like a leech.
Just kept following up. Hey, guys, what do you think about this riff?
Like, Chaney, we don't care.
Came with like 8 new songs. Yeah, okay, we'll check them out at the end of practice. Please. Yeah. So how do you guys feel like now after those years? Do you guys feel like you've grown as musicians?
Exponentially, I think, because back then we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
We were just playing in Matt's basement and whatever came to mind, you know. And we've gone through a few bassists and guitarists since then trying to, you know, back then we didn't take it very seriously. We didn't know what we were doing. We knew nobody in the scene. We didn't know there was a scene. We just knew we wanted to play music and we're having a good time, and as kind of went on, we were like, dude, we could do something. And do something with this, and we took it way more seriously. And you know, with that comes more responsibility and it doesn't fit for everyone. So we've gone through a few people, but Jesse passed away. But me, Ryan, and Matt have been there from the beginning because this is what we want to do. And then Coco stepped on board and.
Like a baller.
But yeah. Our music has changed.
Like a glove.
Yes. Our skill has changed. Mm-hmm.
That's what's gonna.
Vocals have changed. He used to sing straight out of his nose. I'm not even gonna lie.
Be like,
dude.
You're like, fine.
There it was.
Yeah. Right, and I used to do this thing called a Nye.
Like a Metallica,
yeah. Those are my things. One day I'm gonna write a book called the Yahi Yahes and Know Who's of Life. Bestseller.
There's like a Metallica like supercut of like all of James's yes.
Yeah.
Like it's like a 4-minute song and it's just. It makes me laugh. Like this is so good.
That's all it is. So you'll just do it in book form, and it'll be good. Just every page is like,
How do you get that emotion across though? Like in book,
you like, you're like, you like
more ease and
hate. It's all a yes or no like book. It's like what you can do in life and what you can't do. And so to put scenarios like yeah. And then it's like a button you press. It's like an open like a kid's book.
It's like a book.
Like walk into a school and just poop in an aisle. It's like no.
Wait, why don't it just be an audio book?
Yeah. Oh, dude, the audio book's gonna be great, but this book, way he's doing it, it's gonna be like 5% quotes, and the rest of it's gonna be trying to explain the quotes.
You just don't understand my vision, Coco.
Allow me to be inside your head.
Whoa.
You don't want to be there.
No, dude. He just stepped inside my head. It was insane. So, I wish you guys could have seen it.
Are you waiting on the day when he's like, guys, I can't do this band thing anymore. I'm going to write this book. I gotta go.
This is my new future, guys.
Yeah, I got other dreams, man. It just doesn't work. Here's a rough draft, and it's like 5 pages.
I had a dream. I met a guy. Yeah. Sang the song.
That's all right. So you guys, so the sound has changed since you guys started. You know, has it kind of matured? Yes. You'd say in a sense, or what kind of band did you? You know, I don't know if that's a really good like term. But what kind of band were you? But when you first started, what were your influences then compared to maybe now?
Like Derek was saying, at that point when we first started, we just kind of wrote anything. Mm-hmm. We took like any ideas that we had, and we're like, that's the idea.
Yeah.
And we didn't change it, and that was it.
Yeah.
But we've gotten to a point now where years later, like, we know what we like, and each of us have different influences, like, individually, and some that are just, like, way off the wall in comparison to how we sound.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a much more fine-tuned sound at this point because we actually put it in perspective, man. Sometimes we'll get into these, like, hour-long debates about a 5-second part of a song.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's how our music has developed. We got to a point where it's not, let's just write a song and let's just play what's cool. You know, we really like look at every aspect and every angle of every part of the song,
yeah.
the flow of it and the dynamic of it, and you know, the catchiness of the chorus, you know, like we overanalyze songs. So, like,
it's ridiculous.
That's the best way to explain it. We didn't used to be like
that. Yeah. No. Well, I know when I was in a band in high school, a lot of times it was like, okay, we need an intro. Okay, now verse. Now chorus. Verse,
exactly. Chorus. Yeah. It was like a real double rough chorus outline, right?
Right, yeah.
And you're just like writing stuff and you're like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then you next song.
Yeah, and I think you're right.
Next
kind of
song.
As you mature, yeah, you kind of realize that it's more than just this is the structure of a song and this is how it should be, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And well, that's the best way to explain it. Though, yeah. Man.
And there's some songs that since I've been in the band where one practice song, here's an idea, let's run with it. One practice song completely written, done.
Yeah.
There's been other practices where we worked on songs. 4 or 5 weeks.
Man. Yeah.
Like, we just overanalyze. We still have We're still working on that. And that was a year ago.
What's funny is, like, when we first started, like, it seems like the music side of it was more intricate, if you will. Like, it was more about, like, oh man, let's throw 16 notes right here and let's throw this pattern right here and how much can we change the feel in this chorus? And it was like, that would take 30 minutes for us. And then, like, as we've progressed, it's like we've kind of learned that less is more in some parts, and it actually takes longer to write a song like that because you put more thought into the feel of a song as opposed to the musicianship.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So the feel we've come to learn, I think, is like the biggest lesson we've learned as a band growing, is the feel is more important than what we can show off as a musician, because that's what we're trying to do, is to portray an emotion or to pull something out of someone when they're at a show that they feel like they're a part of that song, or maybe they even feel like they wrote it because it's something that touches them. So
yeah.
It takes more time to do that.
Yeah, I was telling Chris on the way down how you guys, your sound is like, you go from, you know, wanting to jump in the mosh pit and get rowdy to like the complete opposite, where you know, almost cry because the emotion of these songs and stuff, man. And like how, and but yeah, you guys do a great job of kind of getting that message, like, you know.
Thanks,
putting
man.
That into your
Thank
music
you.
And stuff.
Appreciate
so.
That.
I think that's a key. Like, a lot of bands that I really enjoy are ones that I used to be in college. I'd be like, if it's heavy, awesome. If it's not, it sucks. And then as I kind of matured, you realize that songs with melody and they don't have to always be heavy are really, you appreciate an album that isn't just straight heavy or fast
through
the whole thing. You know, when
sure.
it's got a little more dynamic to it.
Especially like when a band that's known for being like heavy has that one song that's like soft.
Yeah.
Like this might not be most people's version of heavy, but like Chevelle, like I love like what about them, because they'll have like a whole album of all these hard hitting songs, and all of a sudden there'll be one that is like soft, like what is that song
Panic
called?
Crone.
Panic Crone, dude, off their CD. What is it called?
I don't know.
This Type of Thinking Could Do Us In.
That sounds amazing.
Dude, yeah, it's like so soft, but it's amazing. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just very, very chilling almost. But every other song on that album is like, you know? So I think it's really important to mix it up.
The dynamic in a song like that is all in the arrangement and not so much like the aggressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
yeah.
So when you do it right and you put the thought into it, you can accomplish that same amount of emotion that you get from like that hard hitting heavy song that makes you just want to punch people for no reason.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like Derek said, we're trying to touch people, trying to get people's like attention, like, hey, we have we want something, somebody to hear something in our songs and be like, that helps me through a time.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Each person, you're different, we are all different. But for that same reasons why we are able to do the different songs. So we're one heavy hitting song draws one market. Softer songs, another one. You gotta be able to please everybody to an extent. That way you can actually reach the masses.
Yeah.
And not just.
But it's not even like. I mean, it's about that, but it's also like, you know, if you want to portray a different kind of feeling, you can't always be, you know, I'm not gonna sing this like super love song, you know, about how much I care about this chick.
Yeah.
You know, in this heavy, you know, heavy, you know, song, because that's not going to get the vibe across, you know.
Yeah.
It's all about falling into it.
I'm saying sometimes it's almost just like even the instrumental, like, I mean, things like violin or piano, how much that could build a song to just,
it makes it
beautiful in a sense, you know, and it doesn't have
our
to
song,
be.
Our song, The Reckoning, that's like just straight like piano, I mean, not piano, piano and violin and cello. That's like in vocals. Yeah. Literally, that's it.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite songs.
For me, one of the most emotional songs we've written, because when it was written, what it spoke to me as and the time that we were at as a band was like everything that I was thinking, and it just happened to lay out that way. So every time I hear that song, it brings that emotion straight back to me. So
yeah. Now, so when you guys go into to record a record or an EP, has it been, because you guys have three different EPs or records that you guys have done, has the process been about the same when you guys record, or in terms of writing the material, or has it felt like it's kind of different?
I feel like it's different. Really?
Yeah. Let me explain it from my standpoint. Yeah. when we went to our first EP, we went into it kind of haphazardly. I don't think we really knew what we were getting into. And second of all, when we got in there, like, we only had structures of songs. Like, I went in there and figured out half of my guitar parts while we were in the studio. You know, and then when we worked on the story, even that, to a sense, even though we were more prepared with those songs, when we started the record, we weren't planning on doing a record.
We didn't take ownership, I feel, like, of...
It was one of those things that we weren't planning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was an album that completely fell into place. It just, from start to finish, it wasn't planned that we were going to do an album. We got to a certain point where we're like, well, I guess we can make this an album. Let's make it an album. And that's what we did. And it worked out well in our favor, you know? And then when we went to do our last EP, I think we put a little bit more into it, but also kind of going into it, we weren't 100% sure we were going to do what we were going to do.
Mm.
We went into it, we had booked a date for one song because we wanted to try something new, and then the circumstances allowed us to, like, okay, well, let's turn one song into, you know, six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And we did, and that was a different experience for us, because every single song, we were able to put every bit of us into it. And there was no holding back. There wasn't a time frame. No. It was just, let's put these songs at the height that they deserve.
And Matt Amelung had a lot to do with that, too. He's an amazing musician.
Mm-hmm.
Even before a producer. I mean, he's an amazing producer, but he was also an amazing musician. And he was amazing to work with. You know, he really helped out a lot.
Yeah, he was on the same page with us.
Yeah.
And I think with the Hold On EP, like, to be quite honest, we weren't planning on recording at all. And at that time, our bass player, who is also still our really good friend, Ryan Powell, he was like, guys, like, I'm going down a different path in my life. This is, like, music isn't going to work for me, but I would love to be a part of these songs that we wrote together. And we're like, that's cool, man. He's like, let me help out with that. Like, money-wise, let me do this for you and for me and as my way out. And we were like, dude, yeah. Like, it was an emotional thing for him, because he was moving on to different things in his life. And anyone that's been a musician or wants to be understands that when you're leaving that, like, it is a big emotional deal.
Yeah.
And, for him to be a part of those songs with us, and we were going into a new studio with Amelung and everything, it was just like, I don't know, everything just kind of came together differently for us in the songs and the, you know, it's called Hold On, and that song wasn't even written before we went into the studio. That was written in the studio. Like, one late night, Matt was playing a riff and we were like, dude, that is rad. Like, it was like, what was it, 3 in the morning?
3, yeah.
And he's playing this riff on acoustic guitar in the studio, and we're like, that is awesome. Like, I love that. And then Ryan was totally digging it, and it just kind of built into that. And it's like, that song ended up being who we were and what we felt at that time in that EP.
It worked out perfectly, because we had this idea of what we wanted this EP to be about and what we wanted to title it. And we came up with this, like, really just, like, long-ass title. And it was, like, it was cool because it meant a lot. But then it was like, man, like, that sounds way complicated. And then we wrote this song. And this song was exactly what we were trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, done, man.
Yeah.
Like, this is what we were supposed to be doing here, was this song and this EP. And it really tied it all together. So in a sense, we started that particular project in the same manner we started the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And finished it on a completely different level, because we were able to put every single bit of ourselves into each one of those songs and the EP as a whole. So I don't know. I mean, like, to sum it all up, yeah, I mean, like, it's been very different, you know? It's kind of developed along the years from, like, our recording processes. Some of it was where we were at musically and where we're at now. you know, I mean, to think where we're at when we released the Hold On EP and where we were at when we released our self-titled EP.
Yeah.
We have figured so much more out about ourselves. So, yeah, it just makes sense that
it
was different.
To me, Hold On, what it signifies is, you know, because we had been through a lot. We tried to say it with a story, and I think we did say it a lot. But still, when we wrote the story, we were still at the place we were trying to talk about, you know. Mm. Hold On was us moving on, was us holding on to everything we've been through, but moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think even like the everything from the sound quality to our musical abilities, you know, was shown in that CD. You know, it's like we're holding on to everything we've been through and all our old influences and everything we used to write, but we're taking that and we're stepping forward as a band.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what that is, you know, and that's why I'm really excited about, you know, the next album that we put out, because, I mean, honestly, I've never been more stoked for music in my life.
Well, the cool thing, too, is now we're starting an album.
Yeah.
And we have this idea of what we want it to be, but we're taking it literally one song at a time.
Yeah.
And so this album is developing as we're developing the songs.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different approach than everything up to this point. You know, I mean, we've just written a handful of songs that we're incredibly excited about because of the dynamic and the energy and the lyrical content, and we're like working on the album as we're writing it. So it's different. Where before we just had songs ready and let's just record what we have, let's pick what we have and make a CD, and now it's like let's write what we want to write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And record it when we want to record it.
We're investing the time that song needs. Like when we're recording that song, working on that song, the only thing we're worrying about is that song.
Yep.
You know,
it's a cool thing, and the fact that like we're doing it in different places too. We're right. Feeding off of different environments and different things that we're going through. You know, like it's just a cool thing. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
The last thing we did,
recording in a castle,
exactly.
Yes.
With the generator with 300
exactly
foot,
that particular song we did in so many different places. We didn't plan on it.
Mm-hmm.
We were just kind of like, all right, well, let's make this trip worthwhile. Let's see what we can do. So we ended up in a guitar factory doing drums there. At a good friend's house, we recorded piano in this house in Ohio, and that was just awesome. We were up really late that night, just going over piano tracks. It was cool. Got up really early the next morning and went to a castle and did vocals. And then we ended up coming back and going to my work, which is a beer store in Clayton. So it's a small little shop.
Mm.
Like after hours, we're like finishing vocals and doing some more guitar tracks. It was like nothing was done in the studio, and that was the best part about it.
Yeah.
Is everything we were doing, we were just really, really vibing off of those situations and the energy surrounding them, and like, what can we do, and what can we do? What's going to sound cool in this room? And we're never going to have this again. Let's make it worthwhile. And so
right.
It really amplifies that experience, whereas if you're in a studio, it's just controlled, and it's you do what you do, and it's what everybody else does.
Yeah, you get kind of the same sound, because if you're in a distinct environment, you could get a totally unique sound that nobody's gotten before, and you can kind of even build more creatively on trying different things in a totally foreign environment
you're able to stick with like the old way of recording was very like one take through, but it was also very like people were, I feel, more open-minded with I forgot what song Nirvana did where Kurt Cobain literally whispered the whole entire time, but you'd never know that hearing it, but it was just to get that sound.
Something in the way.
You know?
Yeah.
Was that it? Something in the way?
Yep.
And so that's what I feel like we're able to do. We're using new technology and the benefits of that to really capture real music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like very rustic, like very earthy sounds, I guess, if that makes any sense.
The first song that we did in Iowa at this place that we've been to two times now?
I would say
three times.
Two or three times.
Two or three times we played at this venue up in Iowa, Keokuk. Am I saying that right?
Keokuk. It's Keokuk.
I always mess it up.
L trains.
But we were there the first time, and Derek was setting up his drums and just hit a snare drum, and it just felt so live and so huge. And then when we got done playing the show, I was like, we need to record drums there. Then the whole idea of actually going different places and recording kind of came to.
Yeah.
And even Matt Amelong, the producer, when Derek was playing drums in that room, just sounded so big
yeah.
and awesome, we had to capture it.
Yep. Yeah.
So that was like, I guess, ground zero of it.
Yeah, and as then, far as recording is concerned, yeah.
It's yeah, good. And then going off of that, building with these other songs.
So what kind of things, because I know a lot of times when you think of like a producer who's going to produce, you know, it's like, okay, he just hits record, and what kind of thing did he contribute to, yeah, you guys' record? Because there is a lot more to it, you know, and I'm just kind of...
That's an engineer that just pressed
record. Right, yeah, just record, yeah.
He's a musician, and like, and that's the thing, like, when he had ideas for guitars, he would play it on a guitar to Matt, you know, if he had ideas to Derek, he knew what he was talking about. Like, and when that's my favorite time working with Matt is in the vocal booth, because we'll do the original vocals, but then we'll just go haywire on backup vocals. And it's stupid. The ideas and he sings it, you know, and that's what's cool is he puts a lot of time and care into that song, almost like he's a member of that band.
Yeah,
and that's how it makes you feel. I don't care. I don't believe any musician out there says they're not a little bit nervous or, you know, a little bit apprehensive when they go into the studio. I don't really believe it. Because when you go in there, you're excited, but at the same time, you're like, you got to know all this stuff. You are, like, wanting to do justice of the song. You want to make it what it can be. And Ameling, almost as soon as you walk in and you say hi to that dude and you hug him out, he's like... it's all gone. Like, you're just, bros hanging out.
It's doing what almost we love. Ground zero all yeah, over again.
It is.
You're
man.
Starting the song over. You're just adding another part.
Yeah, he brings like a whole nother view, but a different view, but the same view. Mm-hmm. If that makes
the
any sense.
The best way
at
to
all.
Explain this to somebody who isn't in a band, it's just like, let's just say you have, we'll put it into like a design perspective. Let's say you have a business and you go, I want a logo, and this is kind of what I want it to look like, but I'm not an artist. How do I make it look that way? And you hire somebody, and they take everything you say, and they put it in a way that you envision that you couldn't do. That's what our producer does for us.
Exactly.
We have all these ideas of a song, but we don't know how to do those things. And he sees what we want, and he just essentially takes this collective idea and puts it in a whole.
Yeah.
That's the best way to explain what Matt does for us.
And he's just as stoked about it as we are.
Yeah.
You know?
So you don't just go in and say, I want you to make this album sound awesome. Do your work.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
We don't have to say anything to that dude.
Yeah.
You don't have to say.
He just gets it, man.
Yeah.
He does. And something to attest to him is we're, like Coco was saying, we're doing this whole album on the road, and that takes more time out of our pockets, more money out of our pockets just for travel, for everything else. And when we brought this to Matt Ameling, he's like, I'm down. Like, I'm down. He wasn't like, I need this much extra money, I'm gonna need this much while we're on the road. He was just like, I'm down, I'm stoked, love you dudes, let's do this. Like, he's a part of this band. Like, just straight up.
Exactly.
Ameling is a part of this band, and he supported us since day one, since we've been in that studio, and he's supporting us now, and we support him. So it is just like he's the sixth fold, if you will. So.
Oh, it seems to like producers are almost like, a lot of times it's almost like your biggest fan, and they almost have to be that way in a sense. Not in the sense of like, you guys are so awesome, but almost have to be like a cheerleader, be like, you guys, encouragement, you know? Because if you came in and was like, that sucked, you know? Like, I think it's kind of what you're saying, when you come in nervous to make it feel comfortable, and because you're going to perform better and, you know, not be afraid to try different things.
Absolutely.
And,
you're not going to get great results by cutting people down.
Right. And I mean, I'm sure there's the honesty, like, okay, you know, we could do that better. I'm sure that's
absolutely
important too, you know?
Yeah, it is.
But to have that comfort level, I'm sure, is definitely a nice thing as well.
It's a mutual respect from our side and his, so it works. Whether it's, we could do this better, we need to change this, or, you know, hey, that was awesome. It's all the same at that point when you have that level of respect for each other.
Yeah.
You guys ever heard of Jam in the Van?
Mm-mm.
It's a website and YouTube series, and they have this van, and it's all like kind of done out with all this decorations on the inside and stuff. But they go to different festivals and whatnot, and they'll show up and they'll just get people to come hang out and jam in the van.
That's sweet.
And they so that's kind of what I was thinking of with you guys, like. It's basically a mobile studio, and they'll go, and then they'll just hang out. People do like acoustic, but there's like some of the bands got like, you know, quite a bit of people, and they have, there's some of the videos, there's like 6-7 people like stuffed in the back of this van, like trying to, you know, like they're all like trying to do their part over here with this thing or what, you know, with their instruments. And
dude, that's rad.
So, that's awesome, yeah, though, man. Sweet. I love that.
Yeah, you should check it out. There's some pretty good ones on there, but some of them are just, you know, like a solo acoustic guitar and things. But like I said, some of them are full band in the back of this van. And but yeah, it was kind of, that's what I was thinking of when you guys went on the road recording, like something like that.
Something dude, real.
It is like that. It's totally, like, literally, Coco is not lying. When we showed up to this park at, like, 7 in the morning, whatever it was early.
And we're like, and, how are we going to get away with this?
So we drag a generator that we bought before we went on this trip, because we're like, we need a generator. Me and Matt found a good
just
deal.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case,
we don't know if we're
going to
need it, but if we do, it'll be worth it.
Yeah, so we bought it.
We needed
and
it.
And we get to this park is what it was. And we had contacted them before. We need $300 or $250, whatever it was, and we'll let you guys have it. We don't really have that kind of money. We're traveling from St. Louis. We've already driven 9 hours. We don't have an extra $100
to throw in
there.
They were trying to get us to completely reserve it. It's like, it's like, first of all, I don't think you understand. We don't need a day in here. We need like 2 hours, maybe.
So
I mean, we'll be in and we'll be out. We just want to make sure you're okay with it.
Yeah.
But they wanted us to like reserve it for like a party and like,
have the pavilion. Like,
we can't do that.
We get up hella early. We're up late recording hella early. And those people made us an awesome breakfast. We were staying at Cleveland.
Oh,
dude, I'm not even
God.
Like, we got up. I was like, oh man, this is gonna suck. And like, what's that smell, man? That smells amazing. Like, I'm up.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it was amazing.
Simonelli's made us phenomenal breakfast, man.
Breakfast
had us cookies when we got there.
We got
pizza.
We're so
beer,
far off track right
nice
now.
Beer.
Nice
good beer.
Beer.
Oh yeah. Anyway, we got up early, ate breakfast. We drive to this park, man. We drag a generator down into the woods.
We had to connect
like
6 microphone cables because we were like dragging them all the way from one place to another.
Extension cables up the ravine, across the field, like into this castle.
Had
like,
to fight a bear at one point. You know?
Yeah, that happened.
It did.
I won.
Well, obviously, I would never doubted it.
But yeah, man, we recorded for an hour or two. People started showing up, park rangers and stuff, and it's like we should probably shut this down.
Got in a gunfight.
Yeah.
Water gunfight.
Yeah.
Yep.
Don't shoot me.
But yeah, man, it was crazy. Like, it was fun though. Like, it was great. And we left, and we were like, dude, that was kind of fun.
That was like kind of the nature of that whole trip, though. It was just kind of, let's see what we can fit in when we can. I mean,
random
literally
decisions.
Going into it, we had no idea what we were going to do except for the piano part. You know, and John Simonelli had a baby grand in his living room, and we're like, okay, that's cool. That was one place. It's halfway in between where we were going because we were going to Norfolk, Connecticut. So Cleveland, Ohio was halfway in between there. And that was the one thing we knew. Everything else we had to figure out. So we got up to Ohio super, super early in the day. We were in a town. It was called Sugar and Falls. It's this gorgeous little town, man.
Beautiful.
Little mini waterfall, like, in the heart of the downtown. And we got breakfast, and we're like, what do we do? Where do we go? So we started calling people, and then it just happened. So that was, like, the nature of the whole trip. Just, like, we weren't planning on going in a castle. We just did it.
Yeah.
You know, so it was cool, man. But I think that's how this whole process is going to go.
Yeah.
You know?
So I was kind of checking out you guys' website, and one thing that I kind of noticed was that Love Hard hashtag you guys have. So how did that – what kind of explain the story behind that? Because it seems really cool, like a cool message, you know, that's just like –
Yeah, it was a message that was specifically when it started, it was taught to me. Mm-hmm. And but the rest of the guys, I think, already live that. When I was growing up, my grandpa helped raise me, and he always taught me work tired, play hurt. Mm-hmm. So work until you accomplish your goals. And when it's time to play, make sure you play. Like, that was kind of what it was. Work and play, you know. And then our late guitarist, Jesse, who was, you know, like a brother to me and everyone else in this band, he passed away. And he was always super, like, even if you did that dude totally wrong and every, you know, like we would be pissed about something, you know, and he'd be like, well, you know, like, it's better this way, or, you know, he's still a good person. Like, he always saw, like,
the positive.
Yeah, the positive, and, like, always the level-headed dude, and, like, just the greatest dude, and would love you no matter what you did or anything. And he taught that to me, so I added that onto that phrase, work tired, play hurt, love hard. And love hard was something that this band kind of lived and wanted to portray and that we all took from Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, from, you know, my view of it was to love no matter how hard it is or, you know, when it's not even deserving of, to still do.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, I think that's something we try and portray through our music and through our lives is let's try and make a difference in this world. And we feel like love is that way, is that avenue and that thing to do.
It might seem cheesy and cliche, but it's really the truth, you know? I mean, like, throughout any problems we're ever going to face, anything that we want to change, you think that violence is going to be the answer? You think that complicating it's going to be the answer? I mean, the best way to anyone's heart is through love, and the best way to solve any problem is through love, you know what I mean? It's perspective, it's love, it's paying it forward.
Yeah.
It's under any circumstance trying to teach a lesson that you feel is important that somebody's going to take from it.
Yeah.
You know, and just being the best person you can be. And that's what we try to do, like, when we're on stage and when we're off stage, and through our lyrics and through our music, it's just try to, like, portray this emotion that we put into it. We want people to take that, you know, and
I think
we've had a couple situations where what we wrote really played a super significant role in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't go into it too much, but it's odd how that worked out. And that's where we realized that this is important.
Yeah.
That it's not just this idea we have anymore. And it's incredibly important to just put it out there because you never know when somebody's going to need it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, music's incredibly powerful to where people can, and what's nice is people can interpret it different ways and have just multiple different amazing feelings towards it. And it's got to be an amazing feeling for you guys to have somebody come up to you and say...
I feel like musicians, especially today, like some might, but I feel like we've gotten to a point when musicians as a whole don't realize like the role that we play.
Mm-hmm.
Like the musicians play. You know, if there's anything, literally, this sounds cliche, but if there's anything going to save the world, it's music. Because everyone listens to music.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person, you can't tell me, they don't listen.
What about deaf people?
Deaf people, they listen in their own way.
Yeah.
And it's more words than even music.
Sometimes they have the interpreters at like the shows, right? I mean,
But I feel like, you know, the words you sing, you know, the way you play, the life that you live, you know, I remember being young and I listened to Christian music, but then I heard a band that was supposedly Christian cuss and it broke my heart, you know, and that just goes to show what that says is like, you know, if this band is up there singing all this stuff, you know, having this message and then goes around and doesn't live that.
Yeah.
You've lost all credibility.
Right.
You know, and I feel like that's what this band has always done is we've lived what we preach, you know, and I think that's what Love Hard means to me is, you know, it's like live true, you know, be exactly like live by the words that you speak, you know, live by the words that you sing or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. I think that's what we're trying to do as this band is like be a living example of how the world ought to be.
Right. Yeah, so. Well, it's definitely a good kind of message to spread, but also it's cool that it's kind of got a little more dynamic to it where it's not just saying it means this one thing.
No,
it can be interpreted in so many different positive ways, and that's, you know, to pass that along is incredible.
That's what we want, man. You know, Matt didn't go into detail on it, but I won't either, but I can remember a time where we got a message on our Facebook, and it to this day is the single time that has touched me the most and in this band that has pushed me back, and I had to sit down because it was like, holy crap. Like, dude, I didn't even know when I started playing music that I would, and you know, be a part of something like this. And we, literally this dude basically told us that we saved his life. That he was gonna end it, and it was done. He was tired of being here, and he came to a show on a whim because his girlfriend made him, and he heard this song, and it changed his life, and he decided not to. And I was sitting down, and I hit all these guys up. I'm like, dude, you guys read this message. You read this message. Like, and they're like, oh, no, no, no. So they all go to it. And it's like, holy crap. Like, we were a part of something there. Like, we were a part of that dude's life without even knowing who he is.
Yeah.
Like, I still have never met that dude, ever. And, you know, like, it was just like we're connected somehow. And that was, like, the most, like, I want to do that again.
Yeah.
I want to be a part of that again, even if I live in a shack And I keep making that happen, or I keep being a part of that. Not making it happen, but being a part of something like that. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about being rich. It's not about being famous. It's not about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's not about that for us, man. It's about making a difference. It's about touching someone, and it's about being a part of a bigger picture. And that's what it's all about. That's fivefold right there.
And I think, too, like, the whole dynamic of, like, music, what it used to be, kind of, I guess, in the sense of, like, you know, you said sex, drugs, and rock and roll, not to necessarily point on that, but, like, there's not a whole lot of money in the music industry anyway. So, like, those who want to pursue it as a career actually really do have to sincerely enjoy it, because it's not like there's a lot of people going out there making millions of dollars unless you're, I mean, Taylor Swift or one of these huge you know, there's... I mean, you have to sincerely love what you're doing, because it's not like your, you know, bands are going out making tons of money. I mean, it's almost equivalent to a minimum wage, it seems like now. And it's you have different. To have that passion, you know, or passion.
Yeah.
Well, guitar centers on every corner. Everybody thinks they can pick up a guitar, drums, and play.
Yeah.
And then they figure out, oh, this is expensive. Oh, this is hard. I'm out.
Yeah.
Pro Tools.
Right.
Yeah. With technology, it's easy to be in a band. It's easy to throw out a record that sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a shame, but you know, it is what it is, and times change, and you know, we're still here, we're still trying, and I don't know, man. It's
we're not even trying, we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, we are. We still we all work full time jobs, man.
Yeah.
And here we are on a guys a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Is this supposed to be live? Because try to say Thursday night. No, we're here on a Tuesday night, and.
Yeah.
You guys too, man. You guys are doing something you love. You guys can relate. Anybody out there can relate. And you put in that extra time. People ask, "What do you guys do? What do you guys do? Like, what's your full time job?" Or some people think this is our full time job. Like, and we tell them we work full time jobs. They're like, "What?" Like, well, we work two full time jobs.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
We work during the day, and then at night we're working
one
five
pays and one doesn't.
Yeah.
One
pays and one.
Nah, you forget about that
moving.
$50, man.
The $50 we gave. Fivefold for the first time ever this last Christmas.
A good year last year.
Last year, 2013.
And when I say good year, I mean it like was a percentage of what one of us might have made in a year.
We had a little bit of money in the bank, so we were like,
you know,
it's Christmas like, bonuses.
You know, we all
$50
this year. And I think this would be a good morale boost. And let's, you know, we've never been paid before. What's $50 a person gonna hurt?
So we did it.
There you go.
Exactly. That's what we did, and everybody was just like, "Really?
This is cool.
This is like our first paycheck."
Yeah. Exactly.
You put it up in a frame and put it on the wall.
I should have.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
Dang it.
I would have done the same thing.
We probably spent it on something to do with the band too.
Probably.
That's how invested we are, man. When we have nothing, we still put everything into it.
Yeah.
Believe me, one of us, if not all of us, have been at that point in this band where we had almost nothing to give and we gave everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult
thing. We've all
made
sacrifices and continue to make them for this.
Yeah.
You guys kind of touched on, like, and it kind of reminded me, like, of that story of the year post. Did you guys read that? Like, where how they're talking about, like, you know, those record contracts aren't out there anymore. Like, they're just doing what they're going to be doing and want to make their music and play when they want to play. And but they can make their albums for, you know, like a fraction of what they were paying for albums.
Yeah.
It's never been easier to make an album.
Yeah.
And so,
That post really, you know, was put a lot of it in perspective of how, like, you know, the hours that they, it's not just going in to record the song and then put, you know, it's the hours of loading and unloading and everything else. And like when they get paid, like, you're making less than a minimum wage now. And it's like to do something that you love, but I don't know. It was an interesting post, and I kind of, a lot of that related to, I felt like what you guys were saying, how
it's
not about the money. It's about the love of the,
it isn't. And we've all met the, you know, at least a couple of those dudes on a few occasions, and, and they get in, and, you know, they've been more successful than obviously we have, you know, but they still, they're the most humble dudes and supportive people, you know, and they get it. Mm-hmm. And it's what's funny is, you know, it's like you say it's hard to make minimum wage, but like
for us, like, that's a dream.
Yeah.
Like, that's a
goal.
Right.
Yeah, if, yeah. If
I can live off bean burritos.
Yeah,
yeah.
For real.
Set.
Dude.
Set.
Yeah, that's a goal. That's a rung on the ladder. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, we made minimum wage. Now we can, let's shoot for trying to make a little bit more than minimum wage.
And then, like, the third one's, like, the Porsche, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah,
dude, it's just so funny. Because, like, when we're on the road, like, we wake up at ridiculous times. We hardly get any sleep. We eat, like, I mean, whatever we can find. But, like, we're all so stoked. But we're not stoked on Monday morning when we're going to work.
Yeah, right.
But we're so stoked to do, like, man, I'm literally going to go forever without eating. I'm going to go sweat my butt off on stage, man.
And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And then Monday, it's like, I'm going to work and get paid and everything else.
Yeah, and
yeah.
Actually make a paycheck. And,
right.
But you're not
so
stoked
backwards.
About it because
man,
it's not what you love.
Yeah. We didn't pick up what we were doing because we thought there was money in it.
Right, yeah.
And that's truthfully the reason why we keep doing it, man.
Yeah.
It's the same reason we started.
If
yeah.
anything,
I think
it's like
important to remember that. You know?
It's like a boat.
Yeah, you pour money into it, and you keep pouring money into it.
And it sinks?
No. Have you ever heard of
that? I feel like if you
expression?
Keep pouring money into a boat, eventually it's going to sink.
It's going to be too heavy.
It's going to be so heavy.
Yeah. Basically saying, once you buy a boat, you lose $10,000 on your investment, and from then on out, all you're doing is putting money and fixing it. And
let it be known that Coco is a financial boat genius.
Finances compared to boats.
He actually drove.
Yeah, I got you.
I think he wrote a
building
loan.
Boat dealership here in St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah. Should you listen to him on Boat Advice?
Yeah, yeah. Good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 We said
no.
No. So you guys have shared bill with some pretty big bands: Offspring, Urge, Greek Fire. Is there any type of I don't say like starstruck, but like, what's the feeling of being like, holy cow, like, so just say like, yeah, the Offspring or anything like that, where it's like,
I think I know where this is all going.
We played with some other bands, like, I won't mention the bands that were very big headed and cocky.
Yeah.
But there were.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and it really hurt our minds almost because we were just like, is this what happens?
Right.
Do you get big and just like hate the world for loving your music? Like, But then we played with Switchfoot and Sick Puppies. And, like, I've been listening to Switchfoot for a long time. I think the other guys have as well. Like,
yeah.
John Foreman, to me, is, like, one of my, like, is when I started singing, like, Meant to Live, man. Oh, dude, that song got me
I
by.
Love it for those first two records.
Yeah.
Great.
So Bon from Brook Royal, he was there, and he was, like, he knew. I talked to him about John Foreman. And so I walk out of this green room, and there's John Foreman standing there. And that dude literally came out to say hi to each one of us. Didn't come by, he wasn't like just passing.
Yeah.
He literally came out to say hi and to introduce himself. And he sat there and talked to us.
Yeah.
Thank you for playing
this. Yeah, and they there's another thing. There's like a trailer in the back of Pops where it's kind of a green room. They have like a whole crew with them, right?
Yeah.
And they had the whole trailer. But they gave up half of that so we could have a green room. And we were just the opening band.
Yeah.
What's his name from Sick Puppies? Shim?
The singer.
Yeah, he came out of the green room.
Oh, yeah.
And right before we went on stage and told us, thanks for playing the show, and that he's really excited and just to kill it. Each one of those bands, when they got on stage, said, how about Fivefold?
Yeah.
You know, the crowd went crazy. They didn't have to do any of that. And if they didn't do any of that, we wouldn't think twice about it.
Right.
But they did, and I like we'll all remember that forever.
Yeah.
Because those guys have been going up for a long time, and they still have this passion, and they still remember why they started it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the fans.
It was huge to me.
Yeah.
It was
monstrous, and like that could all be portrayed as like, well, that's kind of what you do, you know? You like get there and you say, hey, thanks, and blah, blah, blah.
But it was
genuine. And even after the show, we were hanging out. We packed up all our gear, just kind of hanging out, talking to fans. And they came out, and they were talking to us. And they even went as far, their Sick Puppies guitarist was like, hey, what are you guys doing? What have you had? What offers have you had? What are you guys trying to focus on? You know, and I told him. And he's like, good that you stayed away from that. Watch out for this.
Yeah.
You know, make sure you're careful of this and do this, you know. And, like, was just throwing it all on the table from what they've learned. It's like, dude, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
You don't know me.
Well,
like, you know, whatever. We're from St. Louis and we opened up your show. But, like, it was like,
Faith restored.
Exactly. Manager, yeah. He wanted a CD. He wanted two CDs. I told him I'd give them to him. He's like, no, I'm paying for them.
Yeah.
I'm like, why do you want two? One for me and one to send out.
Yeah.
High five.
And how crazy. I mean, it's just like, but the genuine people, you know, they're not rock stars, you know, they don't have that in their head, you know, and that's what was awesome.
They were doing, man. And they were very apparent that night in their presence just as a whole, from how they interacted with everybody and from when they got on stage and the way they played and the way they interacted with the crowd, they made it very apparent that they love what they did.
Yeah. Oh, it seems like just from stories I've heard from other people, like there's some bands that feel like they're almost inconvenienced by their, I won't say fame, but it's like there's people who are like, oh, can I get a picture with you? And you're like, come on. It's like, you guys would probably love to have somebody just want to get a picture with
you.
The
reason they're annoyed right now, the only reason they're at that point where they're annoyed is because these people bought so many other albums that now they're annoyed by it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like so ridiculous.
It's stupid. How do you get like that?
Why'd you start in the first place?
Yeah, it's like they're missing the point of the enjoyment of, like, people would love to just be at that point where people even have recognized it. It's just like,
reason you're getting asked that is because of that person because you're successful.
Yeah.
Like, the only reason you're successful is because
they bought your CDs.
Yeah.
They just want a picture.
That just goes back to saying, showing that they don't realize the place they hold. They can make such a big difference because people idolize them.
Right.
But they don't do it. They instead make it very apparent that they're annoyed.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But like, look at the little acts of kindness that Switchfoot and Sick Puppies had.
Yeah.
Look at the influence that had on our lives.
Yeah.
Little things.
It's just a shame that some people think they're too high above whatever and they
could
totally ruin somebody's whole perception of them instead of just being like, yeah, man, thanks for enjoying, you know, whatever. Because that would totally make people's day, I think.
Yeah.
Because music fans are especially passionate and it's like, why, you know, they're probably could have drove 100 miles to see you and you could have blown them off or whatever. And it's a shame because there's definitely people out there that
there are fans. I remember my first show that I played with Fivefold in Iowa, Les
and Janine.
Oh,
and
Janine, my God,
they drove
amazing.
Up from St. Louis to where was that at in Iowa?
The first show we played?
Show I played with you guys. It was in some rodeo arena.
The rodeo, Burlington.
Iowa Rock Fest or iRockFest.
Yeah, it was iRockFest.
But still, my first show with these guys, a fan drove from St. Louis up there to see Fivefold.
Yeah.
It's like, high five, that is awesome.
Yeah.
You guys will always hold a special place in my heart because my first show was seen by you guys.
They're just amazing. They're just amazing people.
Those fans are what push me personally to keep going no matter what. I can be broke, living on the street corner, have people like that come to our shows, I'll still give every ounce of my energy to it.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up. Yeah, I'll say, I mean, you guys are working on a new record, right? Writing music. So I just appreciate you guys coming and hanging out with us, man. It was a blast to talk to all you guys. And I just love getting the insight of just different bands and even, you know, we've talked to comedians, just different perceptions because I think entertainment's such a interesting, I don't want to say career, but it's just an interesting kind of area, and I just love the different perceptions of it and things like
that. Like you said, you got to be an entertainer.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you got to find a way to touch people and reach out to them.
Yeah. I'm really just taking notes so I can just be the ultimate entertainer.
Yeah, I got to
pay. Yeah, talk to that Fivefold band. They're just dicks, man. It just sucks. But I'm just joking. You guys are
they make good awesome. Points on this and this.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, it was
thank you.
Blast. And like I said, sorry we couldn't work out the acoustic. It sounded great, so I mean, I enjoyed listening to it at least.
I feel like that's just blackmail for you guys in the future.
Right, yeah.
Unreleased song!
Oh, yeah. We got this song here that we're just waiting until you guys hit it huge, and then I'm going to go sneak it on MySpace or something.
Exactly. MySpace, man. That would be blackmail in itself.
Wait, never mind. Justin Timberlake owns it.
Sorry, JT. That's my boy, JT.
J Tizzle, yeah. So awesome, well, guys. Fivefold, thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you.
It's episode 30. Big episode.
Woo! Yeah! Happy 30th anniversary!
We're old now. Yeah, we gotta get jobs and have a family. We gotta go on. Sweet. All right, episode 30, Fivefold, guys. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It seems summer bridges are up in flames, and I cannot find a way to cross this river of memories. Wasting time just standing here. We had a fire that could set up a blaze, burning up all the doubt and shame. But those clouds moved in when the cool winds came. We fell victim, but when I close my eyes, all I see are the memories like some distant dream. Take the loss with a grain of salt, but I'm not fooling anybody, am I, this time? We ruled that summer like kings and queens, times that I hold close to me. Reckless and falling for a dream, heads held high toward the morning. We had a vision, a place to breathe, swore we'd never break the chains. But this life has never been a game. We fell victim, but when I close, always changing. So how in the world did we think that we'd stay the same? We're changing, and though we've grown so apart, nothing can take away what we've seen and what we've learned. We're changing, and that's okay. We had our time, and now we can.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.